Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, Friday, May 7th, 2010, I am delighted to welcome someone who I call a friend, Janet Fouts, who's the author of Social Media Success, as well as a longtime social media coach and author. Welcome, Janet.
Hey, thank you.
Did I say your last name correctly? I've known you all this time, and I don't know if I said your name correctly.
Janet Fouts, yeah.
Yep, there we go. The infamous, right? This is actually, so let's talk about this book because it's, I think, really interesting in that it gives very practical examples. In fact, I think the full title of the book actually refers to, you know, actually being very, very practical in terms of examples. You know, what inspired you to write the book, or did someone come to you with a request to write it?
Well, you know, I've been blogging a lot of the content that's in the book for quite some time. In fact, I think the biggest challenge I had in writing this book was actually writing long and complete sentences. I'm on Twitter too much, and I've been blogging too long. So, you know, it really was the kind of thing that just kind of came together because I've been answering a lot of questions for my clients, and I've always wanted to have a book. And a friend of mine was telling me that, you know, it was time to do a book. And that was Sarah Brown. She's known as Guru of New on Twitter. And
yeah.
I thought, what the heck, I'll send in a proposal. And I did, and it was accepted, and I was shocked. So I wrote a book.
So tell us about that part of the process, because, you know, some especially in the digital and social media arena, some people go through sort of a process of finding a publisher in a more traditional route, and others kind of self-publish. And this is a proper book that we've linked to for, you know, for folks that are interested in purchasing to Amazon. How did that work for you? How did the publishing process actually work?
You know, for me, it was really great. And I managed to find a publisher that really wants to let the authors write what they want. I have other friends who are writing books, and they're in their 97th iteration because, you know, the publishers are coming back and saying, oh, we got to talk about this. And you know, I'm working with Happy About, and they also published my second book. And, you know, it was a breeze. I wrote the book. I sent it around to friends to read and give me feedback, and then I rewrote the book. And they have a great editing team that went through and copy edited and made suggestions. But it's my book, and I'm really pleased with the whole process. So for me, it wasn't as laborious as some of the stories that I've heard, you know, schlepping around manuscripts. And I've done that in the past with a cookbook, and it was a very painful experience. So I was really lucky that Mitchell was so great to work with.
Fabulous. We'll have to come back to the cookbook reference later. But I, you know, wanted to ask you in terms of numbers of books that you have. So you have Social Media Success, which
mm-hmm.
is a standalone book, but you actually wrote a book for a conference previously. Is that right?
Yeah, we wrote, Beth Cantor and I wrote a book called Social Media Nonprofit Tweet. And it was really something that came up kind of off the cuff. And again, it was my publisher to the rescue because he had been trying to get me to do one of these books. And I hadn't had a really good opportunity to do one. And what it is a book of tweets. It's 140 character tips on social media specifically for nonprofits. And what we did was crowdsource the book. We reached out to some really great nonprofit people and some really great social media people and asked them to participate and gave them 10 questions to answer. And so there's 10 chapters in the book, and each of them has some really good nuggets of information. We edited them and kind of pulled everything together, but literally produced published the book in 3 weeks. All
fabulous.
For the nonprofit technology conference in Atlanta that was last month.
Yeah, and we have had Beth Cantor on the program before,
mm-hmm.
and we all, I think, bow to her greatness. But you actually have been kind of an unsung hero around nonprofits, especially in the Bay Area, for quite some time. Let's start there. I mean, you've had quite a career, and it's all been, digital to my knowledge, except for the cookbook that I'm now hearing about.
Well,
I would love to hear, and I think our listeners in getting to know you would love to hear kind of the genesis of your career and where nonprofits fit in.
Well, I have kind of a long and checkered past. I'll go only a few years back to when I was a restaurant chef, and I had been building websites, and I'd been building online community, and I built one for the arts called Bay Area Art Source that was a place where people who had websites specifically for artists, but also galleries, museums, performing arts centers, could list themselves. And at that time, this was in 1994, I think, there wasn't a lot out there. And so it was a really great resource. And we got to talking about how the restaurant industry really needed something like that, too. We built a little online community for people who really worked in restaurants. So it wasn't a foodie-oriented thing. It was for the people that were working in the trenches, and we told our stories, and it was a fantastic community. As it developed, we managed to get venture funding for the company, and we went through, two rounds of funding and really built the community and kind of evolved it into a web development company, which is the company that I still own, Tattoo Digital Media. So that's kind of the short story about how, I got into community. As far as the nonprofits go, I think it's really important to give back and any way that you can do that. And I really put a lot of stock into, sure, I can give money to a nonprofit, but I'm not in a position to give millions of dollars. But what I can do is help a nonprofit get in a position that they can get a $1 million grant. I think that the things that I have to offer a nonprofit are more valuable than the money that I could contribute, and that's in helping them understand how to market, helping them get the assets that they need, helping them find resources. And I think that's, kind of a civic duty of anybody in social media. And, I know I'm not alone in that. There's really fantastic people out there working with nonprofits like Beth.
Yeah. Well, yes. We should divulge that we both are on the board of Social Media Club San Francisco Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So we see each other, not as much as I would like, but we definitely are on lots of phone calls and exchange lots of emails over our exciting guest lists, and I know that we both share that passion to try to have a nonprofit or NGO voice on as many panels that we put together as possible. And it's always great to be able to kind of openly share that for me because, having been a Peace Corps volunteer, I'm sort of, a sucker for anything that's a really good cause. And I think others are as well. So I think, one of the things I'd love to ask you is just in terms of success stories, what do you consider kind of your best example or the thing that you're most proud of in the nonprofit space while we're on that topic?
Well, I've done a lot of work with Second Harvest. And some of their projects, it's kind of a long list. But right now I'm working with a group called Realize the Dream, and I met them in Atlanta at the Nonprofit Technology Conference, and we're trying to help them get out the message of Martin Luther King III, and it's mm-hmm. just a really fantastic organization, and I'm really proud to work with them as little as I do.
Sorry. I was just going to say, do you want to talk more about the project? Because I hadn't even actually heard of that, the project.
It's really great. You know, they're working towards they're working towards getting out, you know, extending Martin Luther King's vision and talking about bias, you know, across the world, not specifically African American, but all around the world, and India and Pakistan and Iran, and they're really working to get this message out. And it's kind of a challenge with this particular organization because they their whole goal is to get the message out and to have events. But unlike some other organizations that are really, you know, constantly looking to put on big promotional events to raise money, they don't do a lot of that. It's really a small core group, and they're trying to get the message out, and that's their whole goal is to push that out. And so it's a little different challenge than, you know, Second Harvest, for example, that's saying, come on, donate food. You know, and those kind of things are really, it's easier to motivate people to, you know, give a can of food than it is to dedicate a lot of time to getting out a message. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting challenge.
So you moving a little bit through, you know, the types of work that you do and have done, you've done for-profit work as well as non-profit work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all have to pay the bills. Tell us about your career, because obviously it started from a community vantage point. And when I look at sort of the social media landscape, I think of community as being a little bit different than, you know, the tools that we typically think of as social media. How do you define community so that when we think about kind of your experiences, you know, what's your take on sort of any delineation between community building and identification and social media where people are gathering and kind of finding each other as well?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think that people think that social media is a new thing. And, oh, there you are. People think that social media is a new thing, and it's not a new thing. It's really goes back to those early days of IRC and online communities. And Twitter is an online community of people getting together and talking about whatever they want. Things like, you know, tweet chat can make that even a tighter community. Like, you know, I regularly participate in Jern Chat. And Jern Chat's awesome, and it's really a very tight community of people. So I don't make a distinction. To me, social media is a new word for online community in all of its many forms.
And what about the? Because I think that's, you know, everybody has a different take, but in terms of the types of interactions people have, and you know the way that, you know, different listening tools kind of break out community. Where do you feel like things like online forums, for example, fit in? Do you feel like they fit into the landscape the same way you know Twitter does?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I think all of the different formats of social media have different uses and are useful to different types of people. And there are people who, you know, we used to call them forum rats that would hang out and, you know, practically live on forums. There are people who practically live on Twitter. Although the discussions on forums maybe be a little deeper than they sometimes are on Twitter, because Twitter has this immediacy. You know, everybody responds pretty much in, you know, an instant to something that's going on. And that's why we see trends blow up on Twitter Whereas on a forum, you'll see them in a threaded manner so that you can actually see the length of the conversation. You have a lot more room to talk about things. And, you know, they tend to be a deeper conversation. That said, I'm not saying that you can't have a deep conversation on Twitter, at least start a deep conversation on Twitter. But, you know, I tell my clients that it isn't the tool. It isn't the platform. It's where the people are that you're talking to are living. You know, if your market is all about hot rod cars, then, you know, you can use Twitter, but there are also really great forums that you need to pay attention to. There's blogs, you know, there's Ning communities, all kinds of stuff. So I like to be very multidimensional in a social media program so that there's a little bit of everything, not just to, you know, not put all your eggs in one basket, which is also important, but to really spread the voice out, because some people are not on Twitter. Some people are really only on forums. Some people are really only on Facebook. So having a broad scope gives you access to different groups of people and the different ways that they communicate on those different platforms.
Absolutely. One thing that I wonder about is, you know, you call yourself specifically a social media coach. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you've come to that definition of yourself and if you've always felt like you've been a coach, or do you feel like at different times you've been more like a consultant? Or tell us about that terminology, because I actually think it's very befitting of you. But for those that don't know you personally, how you came to kind of give yourself that that title?
Well, thank you. I, you know, through my web development business, I have always done a lot of business coaching as just part of my regular, you know, it's really online marketing coaching. And I've been doing that with my business and with all of my clients, you know, for 15 years. So it was kind of an extension of that when people suddenly realized that community was back and wanted to learn about this social media thing, I do a lot of hand-holding. I don't do what some consultants do, which is say, hey, you got to be on Twitter, you got to be on Facebook, here's your profile, bye-bye, see you later. I can't work that way. I want people to succeed. I want them to create deep relationships. And I've found that if I just give people the tools, and, you know, I'm in kind of a unique position because I've got a web development company, so if people need implementation, if they need a blog built, if they need Facebook pages, whatever, we can do that. So I can enable them by helping them set up the community, set up the tools. I have VAs that I work with that can do listening and background work. So my job is to help them decide what tools they're going to use and deeply understand those tools. Because if I just give it to them and then walk away, they don't know how to interact in a way that's going to make them successful. And usually I find that that process takes at least 3 months. So I need to stay with them. I need to coach them through the process of how to use the tools, what the voice is on Facebook as opposed to what the voice is on LinkedIn, how do people communicate on those two different platforms, and, you know, make sure that they understand those nuances. And it takes somebody with a little bit of experience to be able to walk people through that and listen to them and find out, you know, what their particular voice is and then where that voice might fit online, how they'll have to adjust it maybe for different networks. So I don't think that, you know, some people tease me about the social media coach thing because, of course, now there's 40 million coaches out there. I'm so happy I didn't say expert. But it's, you know, to me, I'm really proud of what I do because my clients are successful and they enjoy it, you know, and I teach them how to be efficient. So they don't spend all their time, you know, broadcasting crap on Twitter. And if they do, I fire them. So they don't.
Interesting. You touched on a couple of things there that I would love to talk more deeply with you about. And one is something that's come up in our discussions about what we might include for educational sessions through our social media club events. And that is, you know, as you just alluded to, the overused social media expert phrase that I think all of us that work in this arena, and, you know, I was actually in a client meeting the other day and couldn't believe that I was saying I have nearly 15 years of experience doing, you know, on finding communities and then interacting with them. But it's true, you know, there's some of us that have been doing this for a while now, and it's kind of scary when, you know, you see other people on, you know, Twitter and other places where we've seen basically people that we know or that we're now giving counsel to that have been burned. By people that, you know, we've kind of referred to as snake oil salespeople, you know, that are promising great returns on social media and really do a really horrible disservice to what it offers in terms of connectivity to people and reaching places you might not otherwise get. What is your feeling about that, or you know, sharing kind of more of the context of what we've talked about in terms of seeing that trend, certainly in Silicon Valley and San Francisco?
Well, you know, I do a lot of public talks and workshops. I just did one in Petaluma last week, and I'm very, very careful when I sign up for these things to make sure that, you know, it isn't full of snake oil salesmen, because there is a lot of that going on out there. You know, one day or half day workshops that are just full of sales pitches and bad information. And I remember the days when, you know, people did this in web development too, that, you know, it was, oh, well, you've got to have a website and it's going to cost you, you know, $50,000, and you know, they'd give them four pages, and they were all built in Front Page or something. Not to denigrate Front Page. Oh, yeah, I do want to denigrate Front Page. but it really, yeah. You know, there's always, anytime something's popular and powerful like this, there's going to be a certain element of snake oil salesmen. And I'm currently going through the discussion of social media certification and whether that's a worthwhile thing to do or not, because on the one hand, you know, I understand people wanting to hire somebody certified, you know, and there was the same thing with the web development, you know, that people would want Microsoft certified technicians working on their website. And there is something to be said for knowledge and education, of course, but at the same time, you know, I live this stuff 24/7. So all of, you know, if there's something new and I haven't seen it, one of my friends is going to tell me about it in the next hour. How does one get up to speed on that and stay up to speed on it enough to get certified? And once you get the certification, how do you stay certified? So, you know, I know that isn't exactly what your question was, but it was way on top of my mind because I just had this discussion. You know, that, sure, there's snake oil salespeople out there. There always will be in any field. And so what you need to do is really trust your gut and, you know, talk to people. Don't hire somebody who, you know, just comes in and tells you they're going to change your world and you aren't going to have to lift a finger, because that's not true. This is work. And although there is stuff, you know, There's a lot of stuff that you can do with VAs or hire someone to do, you still have to do a lot of work to create decent relationships. And so if somebody comes in and says, you know, we're going to make you a huge success and everything's going to be rosy and you won't have to do a thing, don't hire them. And, you know, what some of the advice that I give people is to say, you know, if somebody calls you with something like that, tell them you got to think about it. And then hang up the phone and Google them and find out, you know, are they represented out there? What are people saying about them? You know, what kind of relationships do they have with their clients? And then call their references. I'm always stunned when people come to me, and I get a lot of clients who come to me and say, you know, I've been really badly burned. How do I know you're not another one of those? I'm not. I'm very honest about what my goals are, you know, with a business and what my skill set is. And if I don't have the skill set, odds are good I know somebody who does, and I'll refer them. But the whole...
And I would imagine... Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay.
I was going to say, I would imagine that you're probably, I mean, I feel very blessed in that, you know, I get a fair, I mean, all of my clients have been through referral. So, you know, hopefully you get to the point, you know, where your name is hopefully saying something and, you know, protecting it then becomes very important, you know, in terms of who we associate ourselves with.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we've certainly talked about this issue of certification, and it's interesting that you touched on that, because I think that that's an area that some people are either very aware of or don't know much about. And, you know, as you described, I think you're spot on with your comparison to being Microsoft certified and having the certifications on the wall. What do you predict in terms of things shaking out in the social media arena? For example, the Word of Mouth Marketing Association notably is doing a certification course, and one of our board members will be attending that. Salesforce.com has some certification now that they have these integrated CRM tools. What's your take? Is there any certification that you've gone through that maybe I don't know about, or how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I'm actually looking at one of my Twitter friends recommended the HubSpot certification, and I'm actually going to look into their training program because I want to know what they're doing. You know, I mean, I'm one of those people who, if I want to know anything, I will find a way to learn it. And I love to learn. That's why I love my job so much. And so I want to see what this really is and you know, what they're doing. I think the university certifications are going to be a waste of time. I know that Harvard's doing one. You know, come on. I'm sorry, but academia is too slow. There's no way that they can stay on top of this. You know, and by the time they've created a course, you know, Facebook's completely changed how they do things. So it really has to be something where whoever's teaching it is on the ground and paying attention and constantly updating. And then once someone's certified, they either have to go through a recertification process or they have to have some kind of a continuing education to maintain their certification, or it's just not going to work. People will still fall for it. There are lots of, you know, kind of faux certification bodies out there. And, you know, some of them, like the one that Hootsuite's doing, a certification, would be interesting to take just to see what they're, to learn from them, you know, to see what they're up to. I'm sure that it will involve using Hootsuite, just as the HubSpot one will involve using HubSpot. Both of those are really great products. So, you know, I will go and learn from them one way or the other, but the certification thing makes me itch. It could just be that I'm a self-educated person. That's the way I learn best. You know, I built the Social Media Coaching Center website for people like me who just want to dig in and learn stuff, you know, that that's the way that I learn best. And, you know, you find good resources and you learn from them. So the whole thing of school and certification just doesn't work for my mindset.
Yeah, I wonder about that all the time, and I just wonder, you know, even with Social Media Club, if maybe, you know, a nonprofit organization like that is better suited because, you know, it, when it comes down to it, we're you know, I think the people that I would consider, you know, good at social media strategy, social media consulting, whatever the need is, you know, they're basically recommending being sort of agnostic to whatever the tool is, yet the certifications are very much surrounded, you know, they're very much around tools.
Yeah,
so
they kind of have to be. Because
yeah, in a way they do, but in a way there's sort of, you know, this sense of, you know, I think there is a gap, and I just, I'm not quite sure, you know, how it needs to be filled.
Well, I think education is key. And, you know, I'm so, since you came on the board and have been working so hard with the program management on the Social Media Club, we've gotten some really educational stuff. And, you know, they've always had great programs, but I think that the last several programs are really stellar. And, you know, I'm really proud to be part of it.
It's very important that people have good local organizations to be able to come to for $10, or you can join the club and get some good information. Our biggest challenge has always been, you know, which level to kind of target to, which brings me to another point that I wanted to cover with you, because obviously you're a pretty savvy business lady. And you know, certainly the way that politics are these days, the way the economy is these days, there's a lot of prodding to get people to potentially start new businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious from your perspective, because I've asked this of Charlene Lee and others who have created businesses, whether it just sort of happened organically or they, you know, created a plan, you know, to take the X, Y, and Z step and end up with the career that they have. You know, kind of, you know, what were your steps for people that are interested in sort of building a business around something that they have an expertise around, sort of like, you know, you said that you did early on when you were still working as a chef or as a cook with food and building community there because you could build websites. How did that transition happen and where you, you know, did you have a eureka moment and go, oh, this is a business now? And you talked a little bit about venture funds before, and I think that's, you know, it's so daunting for people, and especially as a woman in technology or in a very tech-savvy area. Talk to us a little bit about that in general, and what it is meant for you, what your journey has been.
Well, you know, I'll give what may sound like standard advice to somebody like you, but live your passion. The only kind of business that I'm a serial entrepreneur. I do this for fun. And, you know, I love what I do. And that makes it very easy for me to spend, you know, 24/7 doing what I love to do. And at some point you have to go, okay, I got to monetize this. I have to figure out, you know, how I can do this. And quite honestly, you know, when I first launched my online communities, they didn't make any money. And we did it totally out of passion. And we dumped a lot of love into those communities. And I'm in the last 3-4 years watching it come back and actually be recognized as a valuable resource has been very validating, you know, that I've been hanging on to it for so long, and now here it is back. But, you know, starting up a business really doesn't have to be that big a deal. You have to find a need and fill a need. It's really, really that simple. Like you, almost all of my clients are referrals. You know, and some of my clients have been with me for 15 years. And
fantastic.
So, you know, you start small, and, you know, the way that we did it was starting very small and still working full time. You know, at one point I was working at the Exploratorium in San Francisco as their director of web development and running the web development business of my own full time in the background. And, you know, it's hard work. There's no denying it. But eventually your passion can really be realized and turn into a business. And you have to think of it as a business. You have to turn that corner where, you know, you say, okay, this can't be all play. I can't spend all day on Twitter. And it's really hard, in particular, I think, for people who are passionate bloggers and want to find a way to monetize that, because they sometimes don't want to change their voice. They don't want to become commercial because that would, you know, change their brand that they very carefully built. So how are they going to monetize that? And maybe it's blogging for other people. You know, there's lots of ways, but you have to sit down and say, okay, you know, what am I doing right now that somebody would pay me for? Mm-hmm. And how can I find the people who need that? And frankly, I'm really bad at it, or I'd be much better off if it wasn't for all my really wonderful clients sending me referrals and saying, you got to talk to Janet, then, you know, I probably would be still a chef. But I've been very lucky that I've been able to, you know, live my passion and have it actually make money for other people too.
That's excellent. I think that's a really refreshing perspective to hear. And I think, you know, one aspect that I would love to hear a little bit more about is, you know, how do you know when you need funding? And that kind of plays into a little bit of the nonprofit work too, right? It's like, when do you know you need to go beyond the resources that are out there that are free, such as TechSoup Global and NetSquared, which is also part of TechSoup Global, and actually start grant writing? Or on the other side, when do you start needing to look for funding?
Well, right away.
Never hurts to have too much money.
The thing is that, you know, it's a big catch-22. And one of the trends that I'm seeing right now in social media circles is, for example, people are trying to get a big Facebook and Twitter following before they go look for money, so that they can demonstrate that people will listen to them. And, you know, you need to demonstrate your product, whatever it is, or your mission, whatever it is, enough that you see a groundswell of information, that you see people are really passionate about it. And then the money starts to come to you, and you get enough money that then you can make that decision. You know, am I going to try to do this really big and, you know, go out for some venture funding or start writing grants? You know, there's so many small grants that you can get that don't bind you, you know, to some big organization completely. And so, you know, you can do stuff like that on a lower level. I think the biggest mistake that people make, and I made with my first, you know, company that was venture funded, was going for the big bucks, because what happened is that the VCs insisted on a particular corporate structure. And remember, this was back in the 90s when, you know, we were all having way too much fun and spending way too much money. And, you know, WebVan came to the office twice a day and stuff.
Oh, don't you miss WebVan? I miss WebVan.
I miss WebVan.
I've heard such good things about Amazon's pilot, though, up in the Seattle area.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and there are still some some organizations who've managed to make that work. But, you know, the whole thing about funding is if you get too much of it, then it owns you. And
yes,
I know
does.
That people think I'm crazy for saying that, but trust me, it's true. So you need to identify what the essential things are that you need, and then if you've got a community, talk to the community and ask them, where am I going to get this money? They'll tell you. You know, they'll come up with ideas. They'll brainstorm. The power of social media is amazing. I mean, look at Stacey Monk and, mm-hmm. you know, what she's doing now with Epic Change. It's fabulous. And it's all about...
I love that name alone. I think it is so fabulous.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they've done amazing things. And you know, I was fortunate enough to do the Tweetsgiving for Silicon Valley last year, and I actually met Mama Lucy. She was on a kind of world tour. And,
awesome.
You know, it's really a powerful thing to be able to harness a community like that and change something across the world. It's incredible. It's amazing. Everybody should do it right now. you know, it's, and it takes so little. And she's raising that money, and it's her community that's raising it. So as far as, I know I've digressed. Gee, I do that.
No, that's okay.
But as far as starting a business, you know, it's, for people like me, the business part comes after figuring out what it is you want to do when you grow up. And so that's kind of different. For somebody who has never been in a business before or, you know, is doesn't want to kind of dive in like that, incubators are a really great place to start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Renaissance, oh, gosh, I don't remember the full name of it, but there's a group in San Francisco, and I think it's called the Renaissance Center, that's a really great incubator. And basically you go in and they teach you how to run a business. They teach you how to keep books, something that, you know, again, I've never been terribly good at. You know, I have a really great accountant and get a good accountant early so that you don't make those big business mistakes. You know, that kind of stuff is really important. And to that point, find somebody to help you. Don't feel like you have to do the whole thing yourself. There are a lot of things that you can outsource in any business. The VA community has changed the way I do my business. I have some great VAs that work for me, and for people that don't know what that is, it's a virtual admin. They can take care of your books. They can organize your database. They can set up your emails. They can do a lot of social media stuff. Although I'm not a fan of having them, you know, I'm not a fan of ghostwriters. I'm not a fan of having people be your social media presence. There are other things, though, that VAs can do for you that can take the load off and let you do the relationship part.
Is a perfect segue into the thing I was going to ask you in terms of business, and then we'll move past that topic. But I really wanted to ask you, you know, obviously you have your web design or build business, which is fantastic. But the other side is when you're a coach and you're an author, and you know, you obviously have limited time anyway because you're more high profile. What is it that allows you to scale what is basically a professional service? It sounds like the virtual admin plays a part in that. And if you feel like saying the name, if there's a particular agency, because I know there are some, I've myself have looked into virtual admins, and some people like certain ones and others have horror stories about others. So if you feel like endorsing anyone, feel free.
Yeah, well, you know, there are quite a few really great VAs out there, and there are some services like Odesk is really good for technical details. I've run into a few of those really awful services that communication was really bad, or you know, they would misbill. There's a lot of negative stuff out there too, but you know, I'm really running three entire businesses between the Social Media Coaching Center, my web development business at Tattoo Digital, and my own coaching. And the reason that I can do that is because I delegate. I have an amazing web development team that I've worked with some of them for years and years, and I know that when I give them a project and I say, go do this, they'll go do it, they'll self-manage, and I don't need to hold their little hands, which gives me the opportunity to work with the client. And anybody who does work with me thinks, you know, that I'm the only one working because nobody meets my VAs. Nobody meets my designers. I protect my designers. So it's really all about delegation and efficiency, you know, being organized, setting timelines. Stupid things like turning off your email when you're trying to get something done so that you don't get that interruption. You know, I do have Twitter on 24/7, but, you know, sometimes turning that off so that you don't hear, you know, seismic ding at you and go, oh, I've got a message, you know, and breaking your focus. You know, chunking things into time slots works really well. And, you know, I'll do that. At the beginning of the day, I go into my office and I've got a whiteboard next to my desk and I write down the five things that I'm going to get done today. And some of them get done. Sometimes they don't.
That's, you know, fantastic, but because my husband will completely agree with you. He actually was the one that encouraged me to get my first whiteboard, and that thing, it's sitting right here next to me, and it saves my life. It really does. A whiteboard can do wonders. I will endorse that completely.
Yeah, it can make, and it, you know, it also is really great. I mean, this one, I've got a couple, but this one is huge, and when I get out of the shower and I've got a really great idea, I go there and I write it down on the whiteboard, and then I can come back to it later. You know, I don't have to stop what I'm doing. You know, I can just take those notes. And I'm not a very I've tried a lot of different, you know, task-oriented GTD applications and stuff, and those don't work for me. That's just not the way I work. The whiteboard works really well.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that if you just show it to people, you know, it's funny when there's a lot of, you know, a lot of meetings I'm sure you and I have both attended or facilitated where there's lots of diagramming of how this leads to this and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And people get surprised when I take my camera out or take my phone out with the camera and take a picture of the whiteboard because, you know, being able to do that knowledge transfer, even in just sending the pictures, can be super helpful to folks. So
yeah,
you know,
I do that at meetings and then I put it in Evernote. That's the only GTD app I've been able to stick to. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's fabulous.
Oh, I use Evernote, absolutely. I love it.
Yeah, it's an amazing tool. And it allows you to function on so many different levels. I use that and I use Tungle. Those are the ones that really make it easy for me to be efficient and also to schedule because I've got clients all over the world. So finding ways to communicate with them in different time zones and sometimes different days, you know, it's really good to have something that, you know, they can go look at and know when they're going to schedule. Otherwise, it can take days to get something done.
So we're entering into our last minutes here, and I wanted to make sure that I got a chance to ask you. We're at the mid-year point nearly. I can't believe it's May already. But, you know, a lot of people made predictions at the beginning of the year. I'm not sure. I didn't dig up whether you did a predictions post or not. But I love to check in with people at kind of the midpoint of the year to find out, one, if there were any predictions that they saw that just, you know, don't look like they're going to happen this year, or anything that you may have thought was going to happen that hasn't, and anything you're predicting that might happen by the end of the year.
Well, you know, when I didn't do a prediction thing because everybody else did, so I didn't really have anything else to add that would be valuable.
It was
and
covered.
I hate Me Too posts. You know, but I think that my biggest prediction seems to be coming true is that these geolocation, you know, and augmented reality apps are the future, whether we like them or not, whether we know how we're going to use them or not. They're what's going to be the big deal. And, you know, it's funny because I had a conversation at this conference in Petaluma that I'm already kind of over Foursquare. It was fun, but, you know, I'm kind of jaded, and that's because I'm an early adopter. Most people are still figuring these things out, and now they're coming out with all this, you know, new stuff that's going to give people special offers and, you know, their whole thing with Starbucks and check-ins and discounts. And that's all really great, and I think that's the one prediction I probably would have made, you know, is that augmented reality is the next big thing, and la-di-da, here it is. But I've got another prediction for you, and I think this is probably for next year, is that people are going to leave Facebook, and it's not going to be the biggest, greatest thing on the planet because it's violated so many people's perception of privacy on the Internet.
And interesting. That's very interesting because I want to just add a fact people may not know that you and I would be attuned to, which is that there was a statistic that came out recently that in the U.S., Facebook has surpassed Google as the top web destination.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite bold of you what you're saying in terms of your prediction here, Janet.
Well, I just think that a lot of the people that use Facebook really trust it, and I think I would venture a guess that 60% of the people who use Facebook have no idea what we're talking about.
That's,
you know,
probably
they don't
true.
They don't understand that their privacy is being violated. You know, they're only on there to see pictures of their grandkids, you know, or whatever. They don't understand these settings. They trust it, and you know, I've done a lot of searches to bring out stuff that was in my own profile, which is supposedly protected, and found it. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, it goes down to the thing that I say over and over and over again, is there is no privacy on the Internet. If you don't want it out there, don't put it on the Internet. But I think people are going to feel really betrayed when they finally figure out what Facebook is doing. That said, I've got a Facebook like on my blog. You know, I'm going to use it, but I'm very careful about putting stuff out about myself.
So I think that's a great recommendation for everyone is to, you know, definitely be careful, you know, when you're basically adding information anywhere. I worked with a enterprise security client not that long ago, and boy, did I get paranoid in a short period of time. And if anyone follows Jennifer Leggio, who's fantastic writing on social business for ZDNet, but who has a background and works for a security firm, Fortinet, she will tell you, you know, where she will and won't. And I remember her being on a social media club panel and saying, Mint.com, forget it. I would never use it. And someone who was in the management team in the building had just earlier been sharing with me about how fantastic it was.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You know, and I couldn't be the one to say, you know, maybe you want to watch your allegiance to putting all of your credit card, all of your you know, all of your other details
mm-hmm.
Into a particular website. And you know, I think the other thing that I would say from my perspective is I have, you know, with different social networks that will go unnamed but have been purchased by different companies that I know nothing about, especially offshore, not that there's anything wrong with being offshore, but if I don't know if I don't know anything about it, you know, I am very likely to close my account down, and before I do that, to change my password to something that you know, that I'm not using anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of security issues, and you know, I think Jennifer Leggio is just the bomb. She's so smart.
Isn't she fab? She's great.
She's just fabulous. And
she does,
you know,
quick, the quick and dirty webcast here, or a podcast here on Blog Talk Radio as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah, with Aaron. Yeah, they're fabulous.
Yes.
They're really great.
Yeah, they are.
But I think that it can't be overstressed that, you know, when people close their account, the data is still there. And changing their password is really, really smart. And deleting everything you can find is also really, really smart. That said, you know, if you shut down your Facebook page right now, it just means you can't get to that data that they've still got.
I know.
So,
database collection.
Yeah. And, you know, all it takes is one bug. And I don't want to be, it's not about scare tactics. It's about being smart.
It is. It definitely is. So in our final minutes here, I want to give you a chance to give kind of your final word on you know what you are loving right now about social media. We've talked about some scary things, so let's end on a positive note. So what you're loving, you know, is it feedback from the book and what might come next in your career? What is it that you're really excited about as a new tool? What do you want to highlight?
Well, you know, for me, it's every single day I learn something. And to me, that's what's really cool about social media. If I don't learn something from a link that one of my friends sends me, you know, I will find a new app. It's a constant discovery. And in some things, you know, I kind of take apart and see what makes them tick. That's what I do for fun. And so every single day I get to do what I do for fun for a living, and I'm really blessed with that. You know, I've got great clients, and all of this, the power of social media to me is that where we used to have to build this stuff, you know, with toothpicks and bubble gum and PHP and hand code it, we don't have to do that anymore. It's enabling people who have no technical knowledge at all to participate and to engage and to learn new things too. And that's what's really cool. That's just the best.
Yeah, the empowerment part is really significant.
It really is. And the amount of power that it gives a nonprofit to get their word out, you know, and to really reach people that there's no way they could have reached otherwise, money or no money. It's fantastic. And I'm really excited to see how many nonprofits are adopting this in unique and really cool ways. So it's pretty cool.
Well, Janet, on that positive note, we are out of time, but I thank you so much for joining. I apologize to our one person on the phone that I was too busy talking to Janet about to screen and then include in the conversation. But I think we covered off a lot of questions that we've been able to crowdsource from Twitter and other places. And I wish you well, Janet. I'm sure I'll be talking with you or emailing with you soon.
Thanks so much, Jennifer.
Out and get her book. Find her on Amazon. The link to her book will be on this Blog Talk Radio page as well as on my website. And we'll let you go, Janet.
Okay, thank you.
So that was Janet Fouts, social media coach and author. Her latest, not her latest book, but her maybe most known book is Social Media Success, which you can find on Amazon, along with the recent book she talked about that she wrote, co-wrote with Beth Cantor for NTN. And I want to thank you for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay, and apologize for being off for so many weeks with a bout of laryngitis. Next week, we will have featured guest Ryan Tate, editor of Valley Wag, and that's 1 week from today at noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest at jenniferlindsay.com. Have a great weekend, and thanks for tuning in.